This morning, I'd like to think about the love of Jesus. I invite you to turn with me to John chapter 15, verse 13, is where our text comes from. John 15, verse 13. Jesus said, "Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends." Title of this morning's message is, "Greater love hath no man than this." Greater love hath no man than this. Jesus gave us a measuring stick to measure the amount of love. And he said that when an individual actually gives his life for someone else, there is no greater love. He said that, he taught us that, and then he went on to show that that's the kind of love he had for us. That's the thought that I want to grip our hearts today. But I'd like to read verses 9 through 17 in this passage. "As the Father hath loved me, so have I loved you. Continue ye in my love. If ye keep my commandments, ye shall abide in my love, even as I have kept my Father's commandments and abide in his love. These things have I spoken unto you, that my joy might remain in you, and that your joy might be full. This is the commandment, that ye love one another as I have loved you. Greater love hath no man than this, that a man lay down his life for his friends. Ye are my friends, if ye do whatsoever I command you. Henceforth I call you not servants, for the servant knoweth not what his Lord doeth, but I have called you friends. For all things that I have heard of my Father I have made known unto you. Ye have not chosen me, but I have chosen you and ordained you that ye should go and bring forth fruit, and that your fruit should remain, that whatsoever ye shall ask of the Father in my name, he may give it you. These things I command you, that ye love one another." Jesus also said in John 10, "I am the good shepherd. The good shepherd giveth his life for the sheep," lays down his life for the sheep. Romans chapter 5, verse 7 and 8 says this, "For scarcely for a righteous man will one die, yet peradventure for a good man some would even dare to die. But God commendeth his love toward us, in that while we were yet sinners, Christ died for us." And that's the thought, that if you think about someone actually giving their life for someone else, you know, if it was a righteous person, if it was a good person, someone might offer to take their place in death. But certainly not for a wicked, hard criminal who deserves death, as it were. Now, I don't know if any of you know of any stories locally where someone actually laid down their life for someone else. Probably the closest we get to it in our day is when someone goes to rescue someone in trouble, maybe in a fire. A firefighter, in an effort to rescue someone, gets killed. And so that is laying down their life for another. But the firefighter, while he knows it's dangerous, it's not this choice of, okay, it is certain I will die, I will do this so this person can live. So there's a little difference, but yet it's that same kind of sacrificial love. How many stories do you know locally where someone was to die and someone else stood in their place and said, "You know what, I'll die for you." Sometimes maybe we hear stories of in countries where, or in olden days, when someone was condemned to die and someone else stepped in to take their place. But it doesn't happen very often. But here we have this beautiful story this morning where Jesus stepped in to die for every one of us. And for everyone who has ever lived on the face of this earth, and everyone who will yet live as time remains. Ephesians 5 verse 2 says, "And walk in love as Christ also hath loved us, and hath given himself for us an offering and a sacrifice to God for a sweet-smelling savor." given himself an offering and a sacrifice, and this sweet-smelling savor that went up as he died on the cross. This morning I'd like to think about a couple ways, a couple proofs. Some of these maybe seem like small items, but they were things that as I read the story of Jesus giving his life, I was impressed even a few things before the crucifixion. And so the first point this morning comes from John chapter 17. And you can turn there. The high priestly prayer of Jesus. So this first point is that he loved us enough to pray for our blessing and preservation. And I was impressed as I read this. This chapter, this event being just before the cross. Now, if you and I were to bear some horrible pain and suffering, if you and I were to go through some loss, some great loss, what would the prayer sound like just before? If we knew it was coming, well, we don't know it's coming, but some things we know, maybe there's a medical situation and there's surgery needed and the outcome is not real good, but they will try. And so hear this, what kind of prayer would I pray? It would probably be mostly about what I need for today, what I need through this. And how, and here Jesus, as he was facing the cross, prays, and a good part of his prayer is about you and I, his disciples and you and I today. As he was facing the cross. I'd like to just read and have you think about that as we read John 17, verse 9. I pray for them. I pray not for the world, but for them which thou hast given me, for they are thine. And all mine are thine, and thine are mine, and I am glorified in them. And now I am no more in the world, but these are in the world. And I come to thee, Holy Father, keep through thine own name those whom thou hast given me, that they may be one as we are. While I was with them in the world, I kept them in thy name. Those that thou gavest me I have kept, and none of them is lost, but the son of perdition, that the scripture might be fulfilled. And now come I to thee, and these things I speak in the world, that they might have my joy fulfilled in themselves. I have given them thy word, and the world hath hated them, because they are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. I pray not that thou shouldest take them out of the world, but that thou shouldest keep them from the evil. They are not of the world, even as I am not of the world. Sanctify them through thy truth. Thy word is truth. As thou hast sent me into the world, even so have I also sent them into the world. And for their sakes I sanctify myself, that they also might be sanctified through the truth. Neither pray I for these alone, but for Blue Ridge, but for them also which shall believe on me through their word, that they all may be one as thou, Father, art in me, and I in thee, that they also may be one in us, and that the world may believe that thou hast sent me. And the glory which thou gavest me I have given them, that they may be one even as we are one. I in them, and thou in me, that they may be made perfect in one, and that the world may know that thou hast sent me, and hast loved them as thou hast loved me. You see how much he's praying about the disciples' experience and our experience? You see how focused he is on the well-being of his disciples and the blessing that they needed and the strength. Yes, Jesus prayed in the garden and wrestled, not my will, but thine be done. Is there any way that this cup could pass from me? Yes, Jesus did pray about his own need for strength. He wrestled there in the garden. But as I read this passage and thought about how Jesus was preparing for the cross experience, and he prayed for you and I. Why? Because he loved us. We pray for those that we love. He was thinking about us. He was thinking about what we would face, not just thinking about what he was going to face. And so in this point this morning, I asked the question, how much do I think about Jesus Christ? If Jesus, as he faced the garden, was thinking about me, was praying for me in 2021, how much, as I face life and the challenges of life, how much am I thinking about Jesus? How much do I appreciate what he's done for me? How much do I worship him and bless him for what he has done? We don't need to pray for Jesus like he prayed for us. We are called to worship him and adore him. How much do I think about the one who thought about me? How much do I return that kind of thoughtfulness and worship? It's a challenge because we're human. We get busy. We have things, temporal things that we have to take care of. They're close to us. And our minds get busy with them, and rightfully so. We need to focus on some things. We need to earn a living. We need all of those things. But do I take time to think about what Jesus has done for me? Because Jesus thought about me and prayed for me. How much will I, in turn, worship him and think about him? The second point of this morning's message. From John chapter 18, Jesus loved us so much that he willingly surrendered himself to the soldiers. I was impressed with what happened when the soldiers came and Jesus willingly surrendered. John 18, verse 1 says, when Jesus had spoken these words, he went forth with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where was a garden into which he entered and his disciples. And Judas also, which betrayed him, knew the place, for Jesus oft times resorted thither with his disciples. Judas then, having received a band of men and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, cometh thither with lanterns and torches and weapons. Jesus therefore, knowing all things that should come upon him, went forth and said unto them, whom seek ye? They answered him, Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus saith unto them, I am he. And Judas also, which betrayed him, stood with them. As soon then as he had said unto them, I am he, they went backward and fell to the ground. Then asked he them again, whom seek ye? And they said, Jesus of Nazareth. And Jesus answered, I have told you that I am he. If therefore ye seek me, let these go their way. Jesus willingly surrendered. He went out to meet his captors. He introduced himself. Why did he willingly surrender? Because he loved us. Because he loved us. You know, and it shows us here in verse 6, they went backward and fell to the ground. These soldiers were not used to finding, they were not used to going and capturing someone who would step forward and say, that's me. That was so unheard of. Generally speaking, law officers have to work hard to catch those that they want to apprehend, the supposed criminal. And there's a flight, and there's a hiding, and there's a resistance that sometimes follows. And here comes this band of soldiers. Why did Judas get a band of soldiers? Because the expectation was you need them. You need to bind him. But here they come, and Jesus steps out and says, this is me. And it knocked him over. It went backward. Why did Jesus do that? Because he loved us. Turn to Matthew chapter 26. Matthew 26, verse 51. And I want you to think about the impact as Jesus talks here in this. Verse 51 of Matthew 26. And behold, one of them, which were with Jesus, stretched out his hand and drew his sword and struck a servant of the high priest's and smote off his ear. Then said Jesus unto him, now you must remember, the soldiers are all around, and they hear this. Put up again thy sword into his place, for all they that take the sword shall perish with the sword. He just stated the soldier's judgment. You operate with the sword, you're going to die with the sword. Thinkest thou, and just imagine the impact of this, thinkest thou that I cannot now pray to my Father, and he shall presently give me more than 12 legions of angels? But how then shall the scriptures be fulfilled that thus it must be? Perhaps those soldiers heard him say, I could call 12 legions. A legion is 100. I could call 1,200 angels. Perhaps as they heard that, they said, this man is lost it in his mind. He's a lunatic. He's dreaming. He's a radical. This is not true. But they heard this. This man could call 12 legions of angels. How powerful is one angel? And he could call 1,200. But he looks at Peter and he says, but how then shall it be fulfilled? In other words, I have this option. I have this power button I could push, as it were. But I can't. Why can't he? Well, then salvation won't be fulfilled. I can't push that button to fulfill salvation. It's available. It's there. But I won't. You know, sometimes in life we go through difficulties. And by the grace of God, we make it through, and we're glad for the strength that God gave us in it. And that's wonderful. But here's a situation where Jesus went through something and had a way out. See, we go through things and don't have a way out. And the grace and power of Jesus is precious as we find a way through it. But here Jesus had an easy way out. But he chose not to take it. I wonder how many of us would go through some of the difficulties that we go through if we had a way out. And God said, but you go through this and you'll grow spiritually and you'll learn to trust me more and it will do something for you. How many of us would say, okay, Father, I'm not taking the easy way out. I'll go through this valley. That's what Jesus did. He willingly surrendered to the soldiers. He said no to the option of this deliverance of angels because he loved us. He loved us. And so this point shows us something about the surrender of Jesus. To surrender to the soldiers was to surrender to the will of God. Jesus, in order to surrender to the will of God and the plan of salvation, he had to surrender to those soldiers. Those soldiers had no power over him technically. But for the plan of God, how then shall it be fulfilled? How then shall the scriptures be fulfilled? There needs to be soldiers to do this, and I will surrender to them because it's in God's plan. So if this point is about Jesus surrendering, then the question to me is, how much do I surrender to the Father's will? If Jesus surrendered to the will of God and it brought this wonderful salvation, then it's fair for him to ask us to surrender our lives to his lordship. He is Lord and Master. How much do I surrender? How much do I say, Lord, have it your way? Lord, I lay down my selfish rights, my selfish interests. I want it your way. I want to be in your hand. Jesus did that. See, it's easy for us to do that on a nice day when the sun's shining and there's no affliction right ahead of us. It's easy to say, yes, I surrender to the lordship of Jesus Christ. But the difficulty is to do that in the face of something hard. And that's exactly where Jesus did it. In the face of something hard. Not only did he say that, not only did he say, not my will, but thine be done, he carried through with it. So he loved us so much that he willingly surrendered. And therefore we have this call on our own hearts from God the Father to surrender to the will of God and follow our Lord Jesus Christ. I believe that one of the ways that we show appreciation for the work of Christ on the cross is by surrender to the will of God in our lives and willingly accepting the plans, the places, the afflictions, the challenges, the life journey that God has called us on. Point number three, you can go with me to Matthew chapter 16. Maybe this one will seem like a very small thing, but it's something that stood out to me in studying. And this point number three is that Jesus loved us by showing us his foreknowledge of the coming events. Matthew 16, verse 23. But he turned, well, verse 21, Matthew 16, 21. From that time forth began Jesus to show unto his disciples how that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things of the elders and chief priests and scribes, and be killed and be raised again the third day. Then Peter took him and began to rebuke him, saying, Be it far from thee, Lord, this shall not be unto thee. And then Jesus rebukes Peter. Jesus began telling the disciples what's going to happen. We have the prophets who prophesied the coming of Christ, his birth, his life, his death, his resurrection. But then Jesus told his disciples, it's recorded for us. He said, what's going to be coming? He loved us enough to show us the things that were coming. He loved us enough to show us that he was in control. He knew what was coming. This was not something that spiraled out of control for him. This was not something that he was quickly trying to make fit into the plan of God. No, no, no. He was in control. We're going to look at a couple of those things as in this point. Now, we read back in John 15, Jesus said, I call you friends, not servants, because a servant doesn't know what his Lord does. All a servant needs to know is what he needs to do today. He doesn't need to know the whole plan of the master. So you don't need to tell a servant everything. It's true, the more you tell your employees and servants the big picture, the greater equipped they are for to make decisions in the middle of it. But you don't have to tell the servant everything. You just need to give them what they need. But when we're friends, we tell each other everything. Jesus said, I don't call you servants. I call you friends because I've told you everything. I've laid this out. Why did Jesus tell them everything? Because he loved them and he loves us. Why do we have it recorded for us? Because Jesus loved us and he wanted us to know the heart of the Father. And I think sometimes maybe we don't realize what that means. If the story of Jesus' life, death, and resurrection was minus this point, we might wonder, what exactly happened here? What was behind the scenes? But Jesus clearly showed us that he and the Father were in charge, fulfilling Scripture, fulfilling the plan of God, and it came to pass as he said, and he knew what was coming. It was all under his control. Let's go to Matthew chapter 26. And again, this is just a small piece of the story, but it shows us the omniscience of this Jesus, this man, this God-man, God in the flesh. He had an all-knowing mind. Matthew 26, verse 45. This is when Jesus is praying in Gethsemane and he comes and he finds his disciples. Verse 45, then cometh he to his disciples and saith unto them, Sleep on now and take your rest. Behold, the hour is at hand, and the Son of Man is betrayed into the hands of sinners. Rise, let us be going. Behold, he is at hand that doth betray thee. You must remember at this point, the disciples don't see the soldiers. They don't see Judas. Jesus comes back from having gone forward and prayed. He comes back to them and he says, Look, it's here. The soldiers are here. The time is here. Let's go. And verse 47 says, And while he yet spake, lo, Judas, one of the 12, came, and with him a great multitude. See, we know what's going to happen in that story, and so maybe we miss this little detail. But here were these disciples, bound by the same kind of limitations of humanity that we are. And here comes Jesus, and he says, Okay, Judas is here. The captor is here. The time is at hand. Rise, let's go. And I suppose they looked over their shoulder. Sure enough, Jesus knew that. Jesus knew that. He loved us enough to show us that nothing is slipping that he doesn't know is happening. Nothing is out of control. He knows every step of the way. Let's go to Mark chapter 14. This is another small piece, but had a profound impact upon Peter. Mark chapter 14 and verse 29. Mark 14, 29. But Peter said unto him, although all shall be offended, yet will not I. And Jesus said unto him, verily I say unto thee, that this day, even in this night, before the cock crow twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. Now here's some exact things. Two rooster crows, three denials. But Peter, in verse 31, he spake the more vehemently, if I should die with thee, I will not deny thee in any wise. Likewise also said they all. Well, just go over to verse 66 and watch this exact thing unfold. Mark 14, 66. And as Peter was beneath in the palace, there cometh one of the maids of the high priest. And when she saw Peter warming himself, she looked upon him and said, and thou also was with Jesus of Nazareth. But he denied, saying, I know not, neither I understand I what thou sayest. And he went out into the porch, and the cock crew. One denial, one rooster crow. Did Peter hear it? And a maid saw him again, and began to say to them that stood by, this is one of them. And he denied it again. Second denial. And a little after, they that stood by said again to Peter, surely thou art one of them, for thou art a Galilean, and thy speech agreeth thereto. But he began to curse and to swear, saying, I know not this man of whom ye speak. And the second time the cock crew, and Peter called to mind the word that Jesus said unto him before the cock crowed twice, thou shalt deny me thrice. And he went, when he thought thereon, he wept. What you think about the impact of the reality that Jesus said this would happen. And when Peter realized Jesus knew this, I thought there's no way. I thought I would be willing to die with him. I affirmed that. But Jesus said three denials and two rooster crows. And when he heard that rooster the second time, it sank down in his heart. This is the Messiah. This is the one from God. Why are these details recorded? Why did this stuff happen? Because Jesus loved us to show us that I am in control. There's so many times throughout the crucifixion experience that it says that the scriptures might be fulfilled. He said, I thirst. That the scriptures, the fulfilling of scriptures. But not only was he fulfilling of prophetic word, he was also in control of the current activities that were happening. He knew what was happening. He knew what would come to pass. And he showed his disciples. Those are tremendously faith-inspiring to me when I think about how much Jesus knew through this whole thing. And so we see his stately steppings toward the cross. We know this did not catch him by surprise. The all-knowing one, soon to be treated like a criminal. And we see these things. This omniscient God. So if Jesus showed us that he loved us by showing us that he is the all-knowing one, it should inspire faith in our hearts. Can you and I trust this master who knew everything, who knows everything? Can we trust our hand into his? If this experience was under his control, don't you think he can control our little experiences? Don't you think there's a plan of God? There's something to be accomplished as we walk with him? There surely is. And so Jesus loved us by showing us his foreknowledge of these events and his omniscience through this whole cross experience. This was not a normal human to be put on the cross to die. No way. This was the God-man, the Messiah. And he showed us that not only in the fulfilling of prophecy, not only in the shedding of blood, but in his knowledge through the events that took place, because he loved us. Number four, it's probably the main point in communion services, and that is that he loved us by enduring scourging, mockery, pain, and finally death. And we could read Matthew 27, the scourging, the stripes laid across his back that opened the skin and blood flowed. And the scourging was intended to put the body in a state of shock. And then, see, crucifixion was to be a cruel death that lasted long, not a quick end. But he loved us enough to endure that kind of suffering. To endure mockery when the soldiers put the crown on his head and smote it and said, "Hail, King of the Jews." Mockery. When the Jews said, "Away with him." See, John says he came unto his own and his own received him not. One of the things that bothers us most as humans is rejection. One of the things that our hearts, that really hurts our hearts, is when people reject us, when close ones reject us. I can't imagine the rejection that little children face. For example, when a father leaves a home, divorces their mother or whatever, leaves and cares nothing for it. I can't imagine the hurt in little people's hearts when someone like that rejects them. To the human experience, rejection is one of the great things that really hurts. It's one of the reasons why social exchange, from visiting to electronic social media, it's one of the reasons why there's such potential for danger, because we want acceptance. Sometimes there's ways to be accepted in wrong ways. And then the ease of rejection or the misunderstanding of rejection, that's a whole tangled up mess, because rejection, we are motivated to try to avoid rejection at all cost. But here Jesus suffered rejection. His own people, the Roman authorities, he had created every one of them. And here they lashed out against him. He loved us by enduring that. You know, when our loved ones die, when a loved one that's close to us is taken by accident, for example, we wonder what they experienced in their last moments. We wish we knew. Did they know what was coming? Were they frozen with fear? What happened? Did they have time to pray? What did they face? We don't like to think about, perhaps there was slow agonizing death. Those things mean something to us. You can think about recent deaths and think about those big questions. Was it quick and over with? But you know what? Jesus knew what was coming, and it wasn't quick and over with. He knew. This was a long, excruciating experience. And he knew before he got there, that's what he's going into. I want us to get a grip of that he had a full knowledge of it. As humans, many times we face experience, even things like surgery or, say, knee replacement or something, and we know a little what's coming, but we can't know for sure until we go through it. Well, Jesus knew what was coming. And in his all-knowing mind, he could know beforehand what it was going to feel like, what it was going to take. No wonder he sweat great drops of blood. No wonder in that agony, as he wrestled in the garden, it tore his heart up so much. He knew, but he didn't give up. Why? Because he loved us. He loved us by enduring scourging, mockery, pain, and finally death. Well, so then the question comes to us, so how much do I love Jesus? And one of the ways that I know that is by what I'm willing to endure for him, what I'm willing to go through, the price that I'm willing to pay. We read stories of people in persecution days, and they paid a high price. They lost houses and home. They wandered in wildernesses. They were hungry. And you know what? It doesn't seem like we have much of a price to pay. It seems almost unfair, as easy as life is. And yet, how many people do you know who turn back on the Lord in our day-to-day, not willing to be faithful, not willing to stand? How many people gave up? I think I've said this before, that I think that the persecution that the church faces today is affluence, is materialism. See, in history, whenever men lashed out against God's people and took them to the stake and burned them, and when the community would see a man with a smile on his face and a song in his heart go to the stake and die, the community would say, I want what he has. And more people became Anabaptists. But I want to ask you something. When Satan gets a man or woman down because of materialism today and lost in the ease of life and the pursuit of all that, when a man or woman goes down in that today, how many people want to be part of the church? You know what? When we lose soldiers to this hard, cold, it doesn't matter, it makes more people want to go that same route. And that's a persecution on the church. How much am I willing to stand and endure? How much am I willing to be faithful in the midst of things going well? How careful will I be with my life and dedicated even when funds come and I do have some resources? How much will I do it? How much will I put it into God's kingdom and keep my heart where it belongs to be? That's Jesus suffered and died for us. What am I willing to discipline myself in this situation that we're in to be faithful in our day? I don't think we should pray for persecution. I think we should pray for wisdom today to do God's will with the stuff that he has given us and keep our hearts from lukewarm coldness that comes with self-sufficiency, and understand that. Well, the last point is where Brother Nolan touched on in devotions. He loved us by opening the way into the most holy place. Jesus loved us enough to open the way into the most holy place. And I try to picture how that looked. You know, we kind of like these little video clips. You know, the other day something happened with someone in there, and somebody said, well, I wish we'd had a little video of what he looked like when this dawned on him. What do you think it looked like that day in the temple? I believe that preparing for Passover, I believe, was happening in the same time frame that Jesus, the Passover lamb, was dying on the cross. And I believe that as those priests and high priests were preparing the lambs, Jesus was prepared. And as I believe that the timing was right in tune, and as Jesus said, it is finished, perhaps Calvary was close enough that the multitudes of people that were gathered at Jerusalem could hear that cry, it is finished. I don't know. Some would believe that it was. But what do you think it looked like in the temple when those priests knew of a certainty that you'll die if you look behind that veil? And there was this once a year, the high priest could only go in with special preparation. And I'm told that they would tie a little rope around his leg so that if he died in the most holy place, they could bring him out without going in themselves. That's how important this was. That's how big a deal this was. And here they are preparing, and this thing just had to be one loud sound, the way that curtain was made, and it's torn from top to bottom. And you know what happens when something like that, some loud noise, we automatically look. I can't believe that the priest didn't look and realize, there's a mercy seat. I didn't do this. I'm going to die. And they looked around at each other, and no one died. Jesus loved us enough that he opened the way to the mercy seat. And Nolan read those verses about this boldness to come in, Hebrews 10, boldness to come before that mercy seat. I think sometimes today, maybe in our New Testament church life, we forget the preciousness of being able to come into the most holy place. And I believe that that's one of the things that we need to think about in worship services. You don't have to come to a temple to meet God. You don't have to come to a church building. But this is one place where we meet with God. We should think about it in our private devotions. When I meet with God, and can I remove some distractions? Can I give this place some sacredness? This is precious to come into this holy place. And stand in awe of God and what he has done for us. Well, see, the love of Jesus. Jesus loved us so much that he opened a way so he can come to us. Love always seeks a path of reconciliation. Love always seeks a path to bring together. And that's what Jesus, that's what God was doing by having the veil rent. So it's bringing humanity close to the heart of God. And so what am I doing to come before God? Am I involved in the work of reconciliation? Bringing people in, helping them to find and come before this mercy seat and find help and grace and strength. Jesus loved us so much, and that's why he gave us all of these things. In a few moments, we will share together in the communion emblems. I'd like to read.